Hello, Hyrule! Welcome back to the premier Legend of Zelda Travelogue podcast. We are your tour guides. My name is Pete.
And my name is Chris. Hey, Pete, I have a question for you.
Oh, shoot.
So we have talked about in the past how we've both kind of enjoyed those Hyrule Warrior spin-off games to different extents.
Sure, yeah, I liked those. I don't know if I would want it to be a whole series, but I dug it.
So the one thing that I was thinking about in relation to those games, though, is that there's no real Minish Cap representation in those games, is there?
I mean, what would you... Because you do have Wind Waker Link in there, which I think is the closest you get. What else would you add?
Well, that brings me to my question. If you could add any one or two or three characters from the Minish Cap into Hyrule Warriors, are there any that you think would be a good fit?
I think three is pushing it, but I would probably go
five characters now.
10 characters. I think Vati is probably the top of the list, right?
Vati's not a bad choice.
Then how about, like, I know we technically haven't played Four Swords yet, but how about like an Ice Climbers thing where it's all four colorful Four Swords links working together?
Ooh, that's a good idea. I like that. That kind of brings me to one of the options I was thinking of, where could we just get like a swarm of Picori?
That would be, you would need a lot for that, but that would
just
be pretty
cool.
Just
like a whole flock of Picori, kind of like that game, The Wonderful 101, where you have a bunch of superheroes fighting at the same time.
Oh yeah, I remember that game. People like raved about that game. Didn't it bomb though?
Yeah. It kind of was, it had a niche following. But yeah, I don't know. Any other characters that you think would be just a naturally good fit? What about like Pina? Just chucking different fruit?
Nobody remembers Pina but me.
Who else?
I'm sure I'm going through chronologically this game and seeing who would be a good fit here.
I know we have Tingle, but we could always fit in David Jr.
Why would you... I mean, I could see an argument for Tingle's extended family, similar to my Ice Climbers suggestion, but like just that one?
They should do like a Super Smash Brothers color swap for all of the Tingle brothers.
Actually, they might have done that.
Oh, really? In Hyrule Warriors? Can you do color swaps in Hyrule Warriors?
I'm pretty sure they have alternate costumes in that game.
Okay.
Anybody else? Because there's no like, there's no real NPC that I would really want to see in there. Because like in Hyrule Warriors, the first one, you've got like someone so granular in Agatha, which is like the bug collecting NPC in Twilight Princess.
Oh yeah.
Don't know why on earth they added that character, but I can't really think of anybody else in the game who I would want for that. Like, you've got Anju, who can like loose a lot of cuckoos.
What about the Hurdy-Gurdy Man?
Oh, you know what? Actually, Hurdy-Gurdy Man is not a bad idea, because he could probably have like kinstone magic or something.
That's great. That might be the one from this game, because everything else is like kind of blends with Wind Waker.
Here's the thing. Would you rather have Hurdy-Gurdy Man or just have a Hurdy-Gurdy Man costume for Guru Guru from the N64?
Guru Guru. You need Guru Guru. He's an icon.
Yeah, honestly.
I think that was an acceptable enough answer. So, Pete, what are we talking about today on Hello Hyrule?
Well, today we are going to be diving headfirst into Lake Hylia for the first time.
All right.
This is the first time we're going to be heading to this place in the series.
Yeah.
Because originally in Skyward Sword, it was Lake Floria.
Oh, you're right. It was Lake Floria. In my mind, it was Lake Hylia.
Yeah, no. Lake Floria is a place that's in Skyward Sword and Breath of the Wild only.
Okay. But Lake Hylia makes very frequent appearances throughout these games. So it is exciting. Similar to like Lon Lon Ranch and Castle Town.
Yeah.
It's exciting. Or Hyrule Town, sorry. It's exciting to see this name pop up.
It's also usually the homeland of the Zora, right?
Yeah, but not here.
Yeah, they might still be like mid-evolution or something.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere out there in the world around Lake Floria.
Yeah, we'll get to them in time. And I cannot wait to start talking about the Zora, honestly.
Which, to be clear, it's the sea Zora that live in Lake Hylia. But we don't need to crack open that jabbernut just yet.
No. So anyway, this is the first time since we've been doing this where I am in charge of the recap, but I do not have one prepared, so I'm gonna try to wing it off the top of my head.
Take a page out of my book.
So, going all the way back to the start of time, Link is born.
Oh.
Link has a grandpa.
I see.
Link, no, I'm kidding. The evil sorcerer Vati has placed a curse over Hyrule and on Zelda. Link has to fight back the curse with the Picori blade, but first we need to forge the sword in four different elements, which right. We do at the Elemental Sanctuary. The elements are scattered throughout Hyrule.
Uh-huh.
We've collected two of them.
Right.
We went through the Fortress of Winds last episode.
Okay.
Expecting to get the third element, but guess what we didn't get in that body horror dungeon?
The magma grave known as the Fortress of Winds.
The magma grave. Please, I finally got over that. Anyway, we did not get the third element, but we did get the Ocarina of Wind, which allows us to finally use these teleportation gravestones that we've been brushing off throughout Hyrule.
Brushing off is kind of reductive of what we're doing to these things.
What is the verb? Like, what is the action that we have been doing when we find each of these?
Well, here's the thing. We don't really do anything to them. We look at them, maybe read it, and then it explodes.
Okay. So yeah, it was a bit reductive. Anyway, I think that sums it up, right?
I think that was a pretty good approximation. I think our producer was making the wrap it up symbol off stage, but you know, you got there.
All right. I hit the important beats. Anyway, so yeah, now we can teleport all over the map. And I think at the end of the last dungeon, we get the hint that we should be teleporting over to Lake Hylia.
Yeah. If you haven't activated any of these gravestones, then you're only going to have one spot to teleport to by default. You don't actually have to activate this one. They give it to you for free.
Ooh.
And that one is actually right at the edge of Lake Hylia.
Lake Hylia.
This is a pretty place, Chris. We get a small glimpse of it from this perch that we land on,
mm-hmm.
But we actually can't go in just yet. Like, we're blocked from jumping in.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's just a small little, like, dirt plateau that we land on that is just you, a Minish gate stump, and a little Minish mushroom house.
Mm-hmm. So we do the only thing we kind of can do, and we get small, go into this Minish house, and we talk to a Minish who tells us that the Picori Elder in the library can tell us how to get into the dungeon in the lake where we can find the next element.
He gives us the name of the dungeon earlier. Right? We already know right away what it's called.
Yes. Yeah. Which I'm forgetting.
The Temple of Droplets.
The Temple of Droplets. What a...
The like, least intimidating thing.
Droplets. Drip drop.
Yeah. Like the droplets is one of those words like drizzle or, you know, tickle that just is the least threatening thing you could think of.
That's like if the Cave of Flames was like the Cave of Flames.
Ugu emoji of two finger points to each other. Yeah,
exactly. Anyway, so yeah, we're informed that the elder whose name is Library,
yeah,
is at the Hyrule Library,
the Royal Hyrule Library, apparently.
Ooh, the Royal. I don't have that. I need to update some notes really quick.
Yeah, no, that was news to me. But yeah, no, we're going to head to Library's library in a sec, which I think is going to be this episode's Hyrule business highlight.
It is. And it's probably going to be a good chunk of this episode.
It is so...
Because, boy, this quest...
This episode is going to be titled Lake Hylia, but mostly the library.
It's wild. I mean, I guess we'll get to it in a second. But something interesting, it's been a few episodes, but we actually got another sponsor read for this episode, Pete.
Oh, is it conveniently from the Royal Hyrule Library?
Conveniently, it is.
That is incredible. What timing?
All right. I have a little note here that they want me to read. The Royal Hyrule Library wants you to know that memberships are available now to borrow books on all subjects. This month's recommendation from the library is The Lynel, the Witch, and the Wizrobe, a story where three young children are recruited by a friendly Wizrobe on a journey through time to the ancient land of Lohrul, where they will fight alongside the friendly Lynel Aslan.
Ooh.
Against the red-masked witch Mapes to save the kingdom and themselves.
Mapes.
The Royal... Mapes. The Royal Hyrule Library also offers members one free audiobook a month if that's more your speed, so stop by today and sign up. They want me to make sure it's abundantly clear that you can take out these books for as long as you want. They do not care. They just want people to sign up.
Yeah, there's no fines or fees.
Apparently, ever since Kinstones became the trend, people haven't been as excited about reading, so.
Oh, these kids and their Kinstones.
Anyway, thank you to the Royal Hyrule Library for sponsoring this episode.
So, Chris, I have to say, first off, your take on Narnia with Hyrule features sounds way more interesting to me than ordinary Narnia. I would actually read that.
I agree.
Can you imagine if, like, you get to this and, like, the Jesus lion in the story is a Lionel who can breathe fire?
That sounds great to me. I can't wait for Lionels in general. It feels like we haven't seen them in quite some time playing Kirby's Game.
I don't think we're going to see them until we get to the time split in Ocarina.
All right.
It's going to be a bit.
Hopefully by that point we have some cool theory about how Magma's evolved into Lionel and they're actually ruling the kingdom now.
Don't get me started. I'll make that theory. I'll do it.
Okay.
But the other thing I wanted to say is that audiobooks are a challenging concept in here, considering there is one gramophone in existence in all of Hyrule.
I know. So the reason why I put audiobooks in there is because in a lot of the postcards we've been getting, they've been incorporating the fact that this podcast is an artifact that people in Hyrule can listen to. So it's got to exist in some form.
You know, you got a point. You pop a tape into your Sony Walkman. That's how they to listen to all these things.
There you go. Anyway, let's start talking about this library. Whew. This is, so I didn't really think about this until like this morning, but like some of the traditional Zelda design, it'll be like, okay, get four of a thing, get three of a thing, and then like, you know.
Oh, you mean the flow of a story, yeah.
Yeah, the flow of a story, right? So like we have the four of a thing, right? The four elements.
Sure.
These books are the three of a thing, the subsequent three of a thing.
I guess.
They are, because like when you get the books, look at those colors.
Oh, dang.
Right?
Oh, dang, Chris. That is actually a very good point.
It doesn't drag out as long as the mid portion of these games usually does, but it kind of feels like a little nod to the traditional formula in some regard.
That is, I mean, I don't know how much I would count that as being that formula, but like, it certainly is reminiscent of that, isn't it?
Yeah, so maybe we should actually take a step. I was just excited to spout that one out, but let's take a step back and talk about some of the events that happen in this library. So this is a two-floor library in the center of Hyrule. After we talk to our Minish friend in Lake Hylia, an old man walks away from the door that he's been blocking up to this point, allowing us to finally get in.
Is this Sturgeon who's upstairs in the library?
It might be, yeah.
Okay.
On the bottom floor, there are two receptionist / librarians.
Two new character designs. I think they're only in this game.
Yeah, they're actually cute little character designs too. They're nice.
There's a couple of those in this game.
Then we have a bunch of bookshelves and some masks on the wall.
Masks on the wall in this game typically just means if you ram it with the Pegasus boots, you can knock them off the wall. And like you might get a rupee.
Oh yeah. And then we have a second floor of the library here where there are, it's a smaller room with an old man hanging out in there. And then there are four bookshelves, one of which looks like it has a bunch of ants underneath it. But I guess that's really just Picori footsteps.
Tracks, I guess.
I guess. I mean, let's be real here. We're big boys. Mm-hmm. The reason why you see those steps there is to signify that you should turn to a Minish and walk over here.
Right, right, right.
But like Minish exists all over Hyrule. Here, like, what's going on?
These are just the most particularly like rowdy, dirty Minish that live in this bookshelf.
Apparently, they just stay in this library, like rolling around in their own filth.
It could be Sturgeon.
No, I don't think so. You think?
I think he's got tiny little old man feet.
But then he's just walking into this bookshelf over and over, like a, you know. Confused old man.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to I'm not sure how to feel about Sturgeon, to be honest, because for the most part he seems to mean well. This guy, by the way, I don't know exactly if he's like the owner or, you know, operator of this place. At the least, he is in charge of putting books back on shelves when they're returned.
Do you think he's officially hired?
Yeah, I think he is, because if you look at the figurine for the library, he's included.
You know what's funny, I'm looking at the wiki now and like you don't really really think about this when you're playing the Minish Cap, but Sturgeon has a model in Wind Waker. He's a character in the Wind Waker as well.
Okay.
He's just got a big old head.
Oh, yeah. Gigantic noggin.
Ooh.
The other thing about Sturgeon, which is something I don't love, is that he has one sound clip, as far as I'm aware, and it's just him screaming in your face. It's pretty jarring, honestly, because you're in a library setting and some old man just goes...
That's very good.
And I think it's because he is being driven to his wit's end because he swears that something is amiss.
Oh, yeah. He has lines of dialogue about the books moving on their own, doesn't he?
I mean, that would drive me up a wall, I think.
Absolutely. It's such a common theme with characters throughout Hyrule Town. But yeah. So we exit. There's like a balcony on the second floor.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a Minish transformation jar.
Yeah, one of those big blue pots.
Yeah. A big blue pot that we can flip over, get all small in.
Now, Chris, this is the point of the game. This was my breaking point, because I didn't know up until now that you could flip the pots.
Wait, what?
I had no idea. It's in my notes. I had no clue. And because I was wandering back and forth, like, okay, I know I get in the bookshelf. How do I get small? I see, like, what am I doing wrong? And eventually I accidentally hit the pot with the cane of Pachi and it flips. And I'm like, I feel so dumb.
Yeah, I didn't struggle with that. But thinking back, I guess the game never explicitly tells you to do that.
No, as far as I'm aware, it doesn't tell you can flip pots. It just tells you can flip stuff, and you mostly just flip like enemies and lava platforms, and then you just kind of forget. At least I did.
Wow, I can't imagine. That must have been very frustrating.
Yes, on one hand, but on the other, as soon as I found that out, I immediately abandoned the library and ran around to all the other pots in the town.
I have so... It's just one of those things where you push a button and then realize, I have so much to do right now. Anyway, so yeah, we get all small and we go back to this bookshelf with the little ant footprints all over it.
Right.
And we realize that we can climb up the bookshelf in Minish form. And not only that, but there are Minish living on this bookshelf.
Yep. They've apparently hollowed some of them out to make houses, which is, yeah, on the one hand, very quaint. On the other hand, pretty conspicuous, right? Like, you're going to get found out pretty fast that way.
Yeah, I mean, like, they have fully made the spines of these books into ladders.
Yeah.
To climb up the bookshelf.
We saw a similar thing in Rem's shoe shop,
mm-hmm,
where it's like they carved it into the desk, unless those notches were already there. I don't know.
I don't know at this point, man.
It's hard to say. They don't bring it up, so why should we, I guess?
Yeah. Anyway, so you can talk to one of the Minish on one of these shelves here, and he tells us essentially that a human borrowed a book, and now they can't climb the shelf high enough to reach their elder.
Maybe you shouldn't have, you know, planned your ladders on something that's removable in this library. Maybe carve your notches into the bookshelf itself?
Yeah, seems a little bit short-sighted, doesn't it?
Yeah, honestly.
So essentially, at this point, we realize, okay, we have to find these books in order to scale this bookshelf and talk to the elder so that we can get whatever we need to get into the next dungeon, which hopefully has the next element.
You know, not knowing for sure whether the next element is where we're going makes it a little bit tense, doesn't it?
Right, yeah. What makes you really believe that it'll be in the next one?
Yeah, what if this one is gone too? Ugh. What if the water tribe, whoever that is, like, picked up and left?
What's the point of anything anymore? So yeah, we get back to Big Link and we go and talk to the librarians. Before we move too far, I do want to make a note. One of the things that inspired me doing that dumb ad read was a piece of paper in the library.
Yes.
Where it says, this week's top titles. Number 3, Learn to Like Your Like-Like. Number 2, Gorman's Guide to Good Grub. And number 1, Married to the Moblin, which I really like.
I have so many questions about Married to the Moblin.
Oh.
I have things I want to ask about all 3 of these books, I think. But like, okay. I want to go from the bottom up, if I may.
Whatever you want to do.
Number 3, most popular book this week. it is a guide to keeping likes as pets.
Oh, yeah. What?
Yeah, that didn't click with you when you read it just now?
No, I honestly genuinely didn't think about it more than, oh, someone wanted to do some puns. I can respect that.
Okay, so this is a pet guide for likes, which suggests to me that likes have a presence in Hyrule outside of Malice, which is on its own interesting.
Domesticated like.
Because we see them, because we discussed this in a previous episode, where they are aquatic born creatures. You find them underwater. So possibly you just don't see them most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But on top of that, though, who is this? Who is this author? Who is this for? How many people in Hyrule have rented this book?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's doing pretty well.
It's doing numbers.
Yeah. You know, there should be a Hyrule pet store.
I think that would be great. Especially similar to the bakery, a kind of low stakes kind of area that you'd go to.
And there's just cute little enemies that aren't hostile and they just make their little enemy noise.
But okay, so you keep a like as a pet. Where do you keep it? In a little inflatable pool? Do you, give it a sandbox, a cat?
I mean, the water thing is a thing that we made up, right? You see likes outside of water all the time.
Sure, but usually they are hidden there. Well, actually, you know what? If they're in water, typically they're in a sandy area, so possibly they're sand living creatures.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, what do you feed a like? Do you leash it, take it for walkies?
I guess so. You know what I keep thinking of is how every now and then you walk in on your cat kind of just scratching the couch. Do you just walk in on your going into your piggy bank and pulling out a rupee and you're just like, what am I going to do with you? And your like's just wah, wah.
That would be worrisome if it's looking for rupees, because that's typically it's going to revert into a rupee right? Because that means it's feeding on people.
I guess so, yeah. I guess I just blop them together.
They eat metal.
This is going to be a mess for you to edit, because you and I both say the word as we describe things all the time. This conversation is going to be an audio mess for you.
I think I'm up to the challenge. But honestly, I just find it so interesting. I want to encounter at least one NPC who has a like as a pet and see what their life is like, you know?
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, is that why shields are still sold at Stockwell's all the time? I don't see soldiers rolling up to buy a shield. I don't see NPCs or farmers out plowing their fields and their farms holding shields. Is that food? Are shields food?
I mean, for certain characters in this game, they certainly are.
It's just a slab of metal. That would be perfect if you have a pet like, right?
I guess so. Especially considering there are small shields all over the place, right?
Yeah, for the baby likes, for the hatchlings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then do you have to transition to bigger shields as they get older?
I guess it could. This is so challenging. I find that... All right, last question about this, Chris. What would you name your like?
Luke. Luke. I would name him Luke.
That's all I want now.
What about you?
I was going to go for a food name, because usually when I think of naming a pet, I think of a food.
Uh-huh.
Name a cat garlic or something. But honestly...
When you think of naming most things, you think of a food.
Yeah, that's kind of my bent.
Considering your shepherd names in Mass Effect as well.
Oh, I mean, that's not just Mass Effect. Whenever I name a protagonist in a video game, I have to name them after a soda or a beverage. That's my favorite mm-hmm. thing to do.
It's a good thing.
But honestly, I think I would name a like pudding.
Okay.
Without the G.
Would there be a apostrophe?
Yes.
On their
little dog collar, that we would have an apostrophe.
Very nice. I like it.
Anyway, second most popular book right now, Gorman's Guide to Good Grub. At this point, we haven't run into Gorman.
No, but Gorman, I mean, you might be familiar with Gorman from Majora's Mask, right? He's in there.
Yeah, he's also in Ocarina of Time, although he has a kind of a different presence.
Okay, so yeah, Gorman is a real estate agent in this game, isn't he?
That kind of weird, huh?
Yeah, definitely. But also, apparently, he's a foodie. He's a chef, or a food, not a chef, but a food
He's a gourmand.
Gorman the gourmand.
That might honestly be it. Okay, so he is a best-selling chef, author, and he also is a real estate agent. This must be like the richest guy in town. Except he only comes to town when you perform a kinstone fusion with one of the, what do you call them? Like the goddess sisters in the hotel?
Mm-hmm, in the inn.
So like, does he not live here? Because you only ever see him wandering around.
No, I think he just works here. I think it's strictly business right now.
Oh, it's a commute.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right on.
Look at, he's so bougie. He's coming from somewhere far off.
Uptown.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get to see Uptown Hyrule in Minish Cap.
No, we do not.
But I will say, based on what I remember of Gorman from the N64 games, I very much have my doubts that he like has any culinary merit, you know?
No, Gorman, let's be perfectly clear, pays someone else to write this book.
Oh, yeah. Ghostwritten. Absolutely.
This book is 100% ghostwritten. His passion is strictly in, I guess at this point, selling houses to people who desperately need houses, taking advantage of people in need.
It's getting too real. It's getting too real, Chris. We gotta go. We gotta go to number one. Number one.
Number one.
Married to the Moblin.
Oh, yeah. I like this.
Forget for a moment that this is clearly either like a tawdry romance novel or alternatively a marriage counseling guide.
I mean, it's probably just a crime drama book, right? Because Married to the Mob, that's all it is. Married to the Mob is a movie.
Oh, is it really? I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so...
Oh, did you... Wait. Did you just think that someone was having some strong feelings about Moblin?
I thought possibly there was the potential out there in the ether that this was like, you know, a Harlequin novel. You know what I mean?
Oh, boy. No, this is a play on Married to the Mob. A movie, and I guess maybe it's a novel before that.
But that's not... The title does not suggest that, though, right?
Yeah, it's 100% a pun.
Okay, so then, like, the timing of this is weird to me, okay? Because Moblins were not in the world until the chest was opened in this game. So is Moblin just being used as, like, a common phrase? Or do Moblins still exist in the world in some way?
Once again, we come to the point where we made up a thing and then we're at odds with the thing that we made up. So we have to work around.
Hey, you know, that's the name of the game when you're slinging theories around left and right.
Could there be non-hostile Moblins that have existed in Hyrule?
That, Chris, would tie exactly, like, perfectly puzzle piece-like into the theory I proposed last episode.
Do you want to repeat that theory?
In that Malice is a DNA threat, sort of, in that it whatever it absorbs, it can repurpose and reconstitute it as, like, a monster.
Which is actually the plot of Married to the Moblin 2.
Oh, okay, Back in the Habit, that's the one, right?
There you go.
Okay. I just found the title interesting based on it, because like, since it's the number one book right now, that suggests to me that it's recent.
Okay, I thought you were going to say that suggests to you that a lot of people are romantically interested in Moblin.
I don't know, because like, okay, so here's the thing. I've read at least one like fanfic or like Harlequin style story. Don't look at me like that.
About Moblin?
No, not about Moblin.
Oh, okay.
It's like based on like D&D-esque worlds where it's like orcs and such.
Sure.
Which Moblins are essentially the orcs of Hyrule. I think that's a pretty fair, you know, comparison.
Yeah, that's fair.
More than anything, Chris, I want someone, I want so badly for someone to write this. I want someone to write this Harlequin novel, Married to the Moblin. I want to know what it is.
All right.
I want to know exactly who the characters are, what the premise is. I don't care if it's an elevator pitch. I want something. Like,
I at least want to see a movie poster mock-up based on the movie poster for Married to the Mob.
For real, guys, someone out there do it or I will be forced to. You will force my hand if you do not do it.
Sounds like I win either way.
It has been over a decade since I've written prose. You don't want that.
Oof, there is a lot to unpack here. I did not expect us to spend 10 minutes talking about this note on the shop.
Well, here's the thing. There's another note, isn't there, that lists like three other books? I don't know if it's like, or maybe it's like you read it on a bookshelf. I forget the context, but there's three other titles.
Do you have them written down? I don't.
I do. And there's no other information on these, whether about like what they're about or anything, but the titles are, number one, Hyrule on 10 rupees a day. Number two, REM's Anthology for Sleepless Nights.
Huh.
Uh-huh.
Is that the same REM?
I mean, I have to assume, right?
Yes.
And number three, So Your Son Wants to Be a Hero. It could be Verse.
Oh, boy.
Verse, with a V, written by someone named Percy, who is the poet slash bard that lives just outside of town.
Huh. Okay. I want to know more about that character now.
We don't particularly need to address Percy in any great detail. He's just like a doofus that you can help in a little bit, like once you have the dungeon item we get next episode.
Put Percy in Hyrule Warriors.
I'm not so sure about that. I'd rather have the mailman.
Oh, that's actually a genuinely good one.
He's in a few games. I'd rather have that. Anyway, I'm getting distracted.
Okay. Anyway, we go and we talk to the librarians, and they tell us that there are three books that have been taken out and are long, long, long overdue.
Right.
The first one is a Hyrulean bestiary, which has been gone for ages and was checked out by a girl with a cat who wanted to learn more about her new cat. That's the system. That's the system here.
What do you
the
mean?
Librarian, you go to a library and there's a computer system where when you check a book out, it's tied to your name.
Uh-huh.
Maybe your address.
Sure.
Some amount of accountability.
Uh-huh.
Here, there is a librarian who says, I think I remember the girl who got this book months ago had a cat.
No accountability. Yeah, no, that's a very good point.
That is not how you run a business.
How is it? This is embarrassing, but I haven't stepped foot in a library in a bit. Like, how
that's
is it?
Not embarrassing, Pete. That is the reality of the world.
No, libraries are kind of dope from what I remember, but like, just don't really have the time on my hands, you know?
Totally. It's just also easy to consume those things in a multitude of ways that don't require you to go into a library.
I need to at some point. I share a TikTok that I saw where like someone explains a very exhaustive list of all the cool like modern day stuff you can get at a library. It's the kind of, you don't really think about it, but like, it's a very good resource. I feel like I'm doing like a PSA, but like
it's almost like a library is sponsoring this episode of Hello Hyrule.
Oh god, they're invading the real space, Chris, the recording space.
Okay, anyway, I have some notes about each of the locations of these books. I really don't want to spend too much time, but we'll run through them real quick. The first one, the Hyrulean Bestiary, is in a blue house in Hyrule Town with a cat alone in it.
Mm-hmm.
You can walk into this blue house, you see the book on top of a bookshelf.
Right.
Fortunately for us, all of the people who took these books out leave these books atop a bookshelf, and it's the only book there. Makes it very easy for us to find.
Also much larger than the other books.
Yes, much larger and brighter. Anyway, we go right next door. The girl's there. She says, oh, hey, yeah, I did take that book out. Would you mind returning it for me? Which is just like,
are you kidding me?
Come on. The bookstore is 3 feet away. Anyway, so what we have to do is get a jar of water, put out the fireplace in this house like a total weirdo.
Take that, Julietta.
Get all small, go up the fireplace to the attached house where the book is.
Right.
And then we push the book off the shelf. We can get bigger again and pick it back up.
Such a strange series of events.
Yeah, we're putting out, let's be clear here, the theme of this library quest is putting out people's fireplaces with jars of water.
I think it's just in this one, isn't it? I can't recall doing that in the next one.
We do it in the next one, too.
Oh, boy.
The next book is called The Legend of the Picori.
Right.
So this one, this is pretty wild. The person who has this book is straight up the mayor from the SNES SimCity game.
He's not the mayor in town here. That's a different guy.
Right. Yes. Oh, no. We'll talk about that mayor as well. I'm talking about Dr. Left.
Dr. Left. Why is this guy here?
I don't know. These games love to have like weird little SNES nods, I guess, right?
I suppose, or
NES nods.
Yeah, definitely NES. I remember I played the Super Nintendo SimCity and that guy was nowhere to be seen.
Anyway, so Dr. Left is here. He says he's a researcher of the Picori legend, and he hasn't seen that book in many days, and he's pretty sure a mischievous mouse took it.
Is that just a thing that you think happens, Doctor?
Especially Dr. Researcher of the Picori. Are you that bad at what you do?
Well, maybe he knows that. That's why he took the book out, maybe. He doesn't know much about him.
I guess. Do you read one book on a thing and then claim that you are the thing that you read a book on?
I'm sorry, have you been to America, Chris? That is like...
Oh, no. I read the Hyrule Historia, and we've had a podcast now for two seasons.
Oh, no, where no. It's getting too real again. It's getting too real again.
Okay, back to the episode. Back to the episode. Anyway, we shrink down, and we meet a Picori in Dr. Left's house that gives us hints on how we can acquire an item that will let us push Dr. Left's armoire, essentially, to the side. But, like, he's reciting this, like, prose like it's a legend. He actually calls it a legend. It's a whole obscure poem. And the gist of it is, you go in the sewer and you find an item and it lets you push things. So, right. Again, that whole thing.
I mean, I know we're supposed to be, like, self-reliant heroes and such in this game and whatnot, but, like, is it too much to ask that we, the little kid, just asks the adults, like, hey, can you move this bookshelf a sec?
That's true, yeah. We have to, I don't know if we made it clear, but in Dr. Left's house, there is a Picori hole on the second floor.
Yeah.
And, like, the only way to get to it is by moving a shelf over. Anyway, I don't want to spend too long talking about the weird poem. What I do want to talk about is this Picori's apartment, which rules, and I think you're going to like this.
I don't remember.
I sent it to you on Discord.
Oh, yeah, look at this. What a pad this guy's got.
Right? He's got... Do you want to explain what we're looking at here?
Well, part of it is cut off for me, but what I'm seeing here is a hole in the wall that has been dug out, sort of like a mouse, but it's filled with, like, little bookshelves and, like, a big old plant potter that's made out of a pipe, like a smoking pipe.
Uh-huh.
And it's held up by playing dice.
Yeah, isn't that cute?
I cannot over-exaggerate how much I love Minish aesthetic.
It's great. Also, they've got a glowing mushroom lamp, but it's, like, legitimately just a glowing mushroom.
Oh, yeah. Just bioluminescent.
Yep. Which I love.
I love something else that I love about, like, Minish houses, at least in the towns. And when you look at their beds, is that their sheets are held together with a little button.
Yes, that's very cute. I was just looking at that.
The best.
Anyway, moving on, we have this weird obscure poem. We sneak into the sewers in Hyrule. There's a little bit of a trek.
It's into the fountain. It's less the sewers than it is like the water fountain that you see in the plaza. But you do actually have to make kind of like a stealth mission through this garden of house cats.
Yeah, which is a cute little thing.
Stay away from the cats. Cats are evil.
Yes, which is emphasized over and over again in this quest. Like the last book, there was a cat that could swipe at you if you get too close.
Yeah. They are your natural enemy in this game,
mm-hmm.
Which I think there's actually at least two different Minish who are like, you're going in there, be careful. That's a death trap, man.
Yeah.
But you make it down into the fountain, which... I'm not sure, actually, in retrospect, whether this is just the fountain or if the waterways down here intercross with the town's sewers, which is not great city planning.
Yeah, I completely took this as the sewer system of Hyrule.
Ooh.
And there's even, like, the enemies down here are, like, slugs.
Oh, yeah, you got slugulas, which, by the way, hey, Chris.
Yeah. Oh, it's been so long.
It's been a long time coming. Hey, Chris, what does slugula taste like?
I think that slugulas would taste like dumplings.
Could you clarify?
They kind of look like dumplings, don't they?
Not to me, they don't, but go off, brother.
Okay, I'm going to send you... I don't need to send you a picture of dumplings. They kind of look like dumplings. They look... Actually, you know what? I just Googled a picture of dumplings.
And now you want to eat some dumplings.
First of all, I'm starving. I want to eat some dumplings. Second of all, look at this picture of dumplings.
Ooh.
Make those more yellow and make those little folds, turn those blue.
Well, I guess when you put it like that. Okay, so when you said dumplings, I was picturing like bao buns.
No, like steamed dumplings. Sorry.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, in retrospect, although... To say that these things taste like this because of their shape is very, like, I don't know if I've talked to you about the manga Toriko, have I, Chris?
No.
I won't get super into it, but the whole premise is that, like, the whole world is food and delicious.
Uh-huh.
And, like, you know, oh, this is chocolate grass. This is, you know, this sphinx cries the perfect soda. Then it's like, yeah, I know. Your expression says my expression earlier. Just the very idea that these things taste like that just because of their shape is very colorful to me.
It's very much me romanticizing it because I am hungry and do want to eat dumplings right now.
I'm not gonna lie, Chris, I am dying for some dumplings now. Thanks.
All right, so what do you think that these Slugulas taste like?
I'm gonna say they taste like a cross between clay and grapefruit. The grapefruit being because I imagine the threat of Slugula is like the acidity of their slime and such.
Fair point.
Yeah, so highly acidic grapefruit clay is what I'm picturing.
Okay. I like it. It's an informed hypothesis.
It's still very unpleasant, though, which I think is, you know, appropriate for how I view most bugs.
Anyway, we get past those slugs, and we are able to get the power bracelets down here.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Similar to the bow in Caster Wild, it's kind of weird that these are down here and, like, shrunk in size.
Is there even a boss fight that leads to them? No, right? I don't think so.
If there is, it's got to just be, like, 5 or 6 minor enemies. Probably Muldozers, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there is, though. I think there is for the next item we're going to talk about in this episode, but yeah.
In any case, afterwards, Link can, you know, he has greater pushing power, which helps in your escape through the cat garden, because you got to go back the way you came, but also allows you to align the bookshelves in Dr. Less' house, which lets you climb up into the rafters.
Flip Wizard got the power of pushing.
The fact that most places in Hyrule Town have exposed rafters is kind of weird to me. I didn't think about this until today.
A lot of places also have like weird bookshelf situations where like a bookshelf exists against a wall and then another bookshelf exists right in front of it.
Yeah, there's something.
You got to put both of those next to each other against the wall. Like, that's not how you do bookshelves.
People got to like do some Marie Kondo reading or something to fix their whole living situation, I think.
Yeah, the feng shui in Hyrule Town here is no good.
But anyway, when you get up into the rafters, you find a Minish who is trying to push the book that we're after off of the rafters.
Oh, yeah.
And he needs your help to do so.
Yeah, so you basically clone yourself, and then the three of you at that point kind of like just jump on it like a trampoline until it falls down off the rafters.
How long did it take you to figure that out, Chris?
Yeah, it took me a minute. I think it took me a minute.
I fell off of the rafters and back into the house proper, like, I think at least 10 times before I figured that out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's no fun.
I may be a talented tour guide, but I am not very good at problem solving.
You're a flip wizard. You're not a jump puzzle guy.
That's exactly it.
Anyway, so that's the second book. The next book that we're after is A History of Masks.
Oh.
And it's checked out by Mayor Hagen.
Mayor Hagen.
The mayor of this game.
A man who, the more I read into him, the more I dislike.
Not a great guy. You'll even be able to kind of get that impression from the brief conversation you have with him.
He'll reveal himself that he is not a good person.
So we go to the mayor's office, and he says he did check it out, but he gives us kind of no more information.
Mm-hmm.
This is the point where I realized, oh, you could put on the Pegasus boots and just knock the masks off the wall by bumping into the wall over and over again.
It's a shame, these delicate things. These are like pieces of art that you're just destroying.
It's funny, because, and I'm sorry to keep bringing this up, but because I'm playing Mass Effect right now, it felt like me doing a renegade action. It felt like, oh, you don't want to tell me where the book is? Oh, it'd be a shame if I put these boots on here.
Knock them down one at a time. How about now, Mr. Mayor?
Oh, it'd be a shame if I ran my head into the wall 6 times. Like, I thought you were trying to threaten the information out of him. What you're really doing is you're moving the mask so you have a more clear path to a hole on the second floor, kind of this office.
Mm-hmm. Similar to Dr. Leff's house. It's weirdly, Mayor Hagen actually hints at this solution, like, because similarly, I thought that if you knocked the masks down, you'd get some sort of reaction. What he tells you is something to the tune of like, oh yeah, I don't know, but ask the masks. Maybe the masks will tell you.
What a weird thing to say.
This dude has got to be like the great grandfather of the happy mask salesman, because he is just obsessed with masks.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. They should have like visually given some relation.
Ooh, that would have been neat if the happy mask salesman's design was the mayor.
Yes, but listen, I want to keep talking about this dude's relationship to mask, books, but let's push forward a little bit more because it's going to get weird in just a second.
Go for it.
So we go into this Minish room where the Minish tells us that the mayor brought the book to his cabin by the lake.
Right.
So we navigate through Hyrule to the cabin by the lake, which is like kind of in South Lake Hylia, which you get through.
It's the same route that we take to get to Maple's place, right? Or Syrup?
Syrup's place, yeah. Anyway, there's literally a sign that points to the mayor's cabin that says mayor's cabin this way, which is like, you wouldn't broadcast that information in real life, but okay, I appreciate that in this instance.
It says mayor's cabin, no digging.
Does it really?
Yeah, it's something like that. It says no digging, please, or digging is prohibited.
All right. There's definitely a reason for that. We can dig through some dirt caves right by that sign, which gets us to the cabin. We can run into a tree right behind the cabin, which lets us shrink down and get into the cabin.
Yeah, there's a few trees like that in this game, which that's another thing it took me a while. If you use the Pegasus boots to ram certain like sparkly trees, then all of the leaves and branches will fall off. The whole thing.
The whole top half of the tree falls off. But I think that's a Link to the Past thing, isn't it? That's not new to this game.
Is it? I don't know.
I believe so. It's definitely not unique to this game.
Huh.
Anyway, I really want to talk about the inside of this dude's cabin. So I'm going to send you this screenshot.
Okie dokie.
Let's talk about what we see in this cabin here. We have a little hot tub in the corner. Okay, it's the mayor. He probably has a lot of money.
Is it a hot tub?
I don't know. One could imagine it might be. He's got a pretty standard looking house, more or less. But it's covered by weird, emotionless masks.
I'm telling you, guy loves masks.
There is a shelf with masks, which is fine, whatever. He's like a hobbyist. But why are there masks in the fireplace?
In the fireplace?
Do you see? I have it circled there.
Oh, that's unpleasant.
I don't like that at all.
Oh, I don't know what's going on there, Mr. Mayor.
That's serial killer behavior, Mr. Mayor.
Oh, okay. Theory. This is not just a fireplace. This is a kiln. And those are masks that he's cooking. He's making them.
Oh, okay. So he's actually like a mask builder, not just a mask appreciator.
Yeah. Isn't that what the book is? Like, oh no, it's a history of masks. Well, he does mention in certain bits of dialogue that he likes to make his own masks.
Okay. I think you might have cracked this one wide open then.
Granted, he is still like a huge jerk who I don't like.
And I still think he might be a sociopath.
Ooh, Chris, especially if you know what the nature of this cabin is. Do you know why this cabin is here? Which is surrounded by like a moat almost with a plank leading into to the cabin.
What's the purpose?
This cabin is Mayor Hagen's escape for when Hyrule Town is attacked.
Interesting.
If the town is overrun, the mayor's gonna bail and head to this fairly defensed cabin in the woods.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely on the outskirts of Hyrule.
And on top of that, if you go around the outside of his house in town, that leads into the underground passageways that we mentioned in the previous episode.
Oh, you're right.
Which, hey, guess what? It's another escape route out of town.
Interesting.
This guy's a huge coward.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. When you find the book, he has a line of dialogue that is some more weirdo behavior. He says, "Ah, you seem to have found the book, safe and sound and in fine shape, but only because you listened to my masks like a good little boy, right?"
This man cannot be trusted. He sits around all day thinking about, reading about, and making masks. That is the number one thing he does. He even says, okay, before I even forget, this is a legit block of dialogue from the Mayor Hagen himself. "I think I finally got a good grasp on how things run in Hyrule. Things run so smoothly around here, and I haven't even done a thing. I wonder how much better this place would be if I actually did anything."
Ha ha ha. Yeah, the game's dialogue definitely leans into that aspect of his personality.
This guy sucks. I'm waiting, like, you know, for someone to run an election against this guy.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Who should run an election?
Who knows? If we even need a leader here in the first place, by the way, because the castle where the rulers of the whole, like, country live down the road.
Gustav.
Gustav?
Gustav. The figurine guy.
No. You're thinking of Karlov, Chris.
Oh, I thought his name was Gustav. All right, listen. It's been a long week.
Oh boy, has it. In any case, this is the last book, right?
This is the last book. We bring these three books back, and now I'm going to send you one last screenshot. This is kind of tying back to what I said a minute ago of like, oh, you're collecting. This is the second part of the collecting thing.
Right.
It's got the three books are red, green, and blue.
That's so weird.
The three colors of, you know, the goddesses or the goddesses' symbols in most cases.
Sure.
Just a fun little, you know, detail. I'm not saying it's one, like a definite parallel or whatever, but just a fun little thing. Anyway, we go back to the library. We give all the three books back. We are now the librarian's favorite person in the world.
I'm okay with that.
And when we go to that second floor, we could see, oh, all the books are back on the bookshelf.
Right. And we are able to climb back up to Elder Library.
And when we do, we tell the Elder that we want to get into the Temple of Twopwitz.
Oh.
And he tells us...
I don't like that.
And he tells us to stand on a clover in front of him. And suddenly, he just opens a trap door on us.
What? This... He's like, oh, thanks, you found your way here. Let me give you a reward. And you drop down back into the sewers.
In case you were wondering, in case you were thinking, oh, you know what? It's been a while since someone has given Link a trial. Given Link, the one person who's trying to do anything about this curse.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no one has tested him in a bit.
Here's the thing, Chris. Here's a little something that I learned about Elder Library and the library. This guy is the twin brother of Gentari.
Yeah, he even mentions that, oh, it's been a while since his brother visited.
That's kind of weird, right?
I guess. I mean, they used a very similar sprite.
But why are these two brothers in charge in separate places?
Because they're old. Old means authority.
Chris, I was baiting you for a particular answer, and that was not it.
What was the answer you wanted?
What I expected you to say is that the brothers banished each other and they had to move away.
Okay, listen. When I used the banishing, I still stand by those banishing statements.
It's not wise to do so.
These are not the banished brothers.
But yeah, no. Elder Library, bad. Tricked me. Don't like him.
Uh-uh. He tells us this is another trial for another item that'll get us to the Temple of Droplets. We navigate through the sewer systems or the fountain systems, whatever we want to call it, mm-hmm. similar to what we saw a second ago. Kill some more Slugulas. We fight a pair of scissor beetles, and suddenly an item chest appears.
Right.
With some little Fwippos.
No, please. This has...
Little Fwippos.
It's gone on long enough. I'm putting my foot down. I'm vetoing the ooh-woo voice.
Can I say, I am genuinely glad that you don't have to equip the flippers in this game.
Oh boy, tell me about it, huh?
I guess the power bracelets you don't have to equip either, which is good.
Well, the thing is, though, the trade-off is that when you're swimming, you can't use any of your items.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. But you don't really need to. It would be nice to get rid of some Octoroks in like Hylia. But
sure.
Anyway, you get the flippers and suddenly you are well equipped to make your way to the next dungeon or the main focus of this episode, which we're an hour in now and we haven't really spoken about at all. Lake Hylia. Should we put that music in a second time?
Nah, I mean, we're back. We're back at Lake Hylia.
Put that music in reverse.
Lake Hylia.
Lake Hylia.
Again, for real this time, though.
I am so excited to be past the library and talking about Lake Hylia.
Beautiful Lake Hylia, named after the goddess, of course, although this was a retroactive fact.
Yeah, I guess that gets into some weird territory considering some things in this game that we have not yet talked about, and we cannot talk about in this episode before you think about doing it.
Wait, what do you mean?
The in stuff. Isn't Hylia...
Oh, that stuff? Yeah, no, I was going to hold off on that. That was...
Okay, let's not talk about it.
But I mean, I just find it kind of weird because this is, I think, the only place in Hyrule history that is directly named after a goddess. Like, you got, like, Lanayru, you got Eldin, different places that are tangentially mm-hmm. named after the goddesses, but you don't have, like, the Sea of Furor. You don't have, like, you know, Dintown.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing's coming to mind. I'm sure as soon as we turn off this recording, we'll think of, like, another one instance.
It's very possible.
But for the most part, you're right. It's always something appending onto the name of the goddesses.
Right. And again, we're not going to, you know, open up that treasure trove Zora content because they ain't here.
They are not. But what is here is this beautiful seafoam green tinted sort of mellow forest area.
It's kind of nice. nice.
Yeah.
It is a nice like transition between, you know, the Hyrule overworld like Lon Lon Ranch and also the colors of Minish Woods.
Yeah, Lon Lon Ranch is a good one to bring up here because it does kind of feel, it feels like transitionary from Lon Lon Ranch.
Yeah.
Like you can kind of see some similarities. It's just this is a lot more blue.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of those, I guess they're sand, as we determined in the last episode, sand caves in here.
It could be sand. It could be a lot of things. Who's to say?
There's also a fair amount of deep water. And something weird I found, like there's little spurts of ice throughout Lake Hylia.
Is it all ice? I thought like there's just ice around the Temple of Droplets, but like everything else is like...
There's also ice within a cave nearby.
Okay.
And it's just like, what's the temperature here?
Could be a chilly day.
Maybe. It doesn't really seem chilly anywhere else except for where the ice exists.
That's fair. Especially if you're near Mount Krennel.
Yeah. Yeah. But even just within Lake Hylia, it's like, it's not consistent. It's just like little chunks where it looks cold. Anyway, a lot of deep water here. Most of this place is completely inaccessible.
Unacceptable.
Completely inaccessible until we get the flippers. Do we want to talk about some of the enemies in here?
Well, here's the thing, Chris. This is, I think, the first time in this game where we're arriving in a new location where none of the enemies are new.
That's correct. We got some blue Octoroks, some green choo-choo, like-likes, Moldorms, P-hats.
Somewhere on the land, you can find a Moblin.
You can find a single spear Moblin, if I remember correctly.
He got lost.
Yeah. He's out of his element. But yeah, nothing brand new.
I will say this though, Chris. When you're out on the water, you're going to want to use that like diving mechanic that the flippers give you because the combo of P-hats and blue Octorok out on the water can get a little overwhelming if you're not out there specifically hunting monsters.
Yeah, they are a nuisance. Specifically in that, oh, your health isn't going to fully get drained way, but they are annoying to traverse when they keep spitting their stuff at you.
Yeah, it's more the knockback than the damage that gets annoying.
Something to note here, and we did kind of talk about it in an earlier episode, Stockwell has a house here up north.
Yeah, it's where he keeps Fifi.
Yeah, it's a beautiful looking house.
Yeah, weirdly.
This house is nicer looking than the mayor's house in the same area.
The guy's a merchant. He might, you know, be able to afford it.
But he's also very negligent to his sweet dog, Fifi.
I mean, he does send you to feed his dog.
Yeah.
Which I guess he has some responsibility. Although, why didn't he just leave the food for the dog?
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, that's how we get that third jar.
Bottle, Chris, please.
Third bottle. Sorry.
Please respect the fiction, Chris.
Also, speaking of local businesses, Waveblade's here.
Oh, yeah.
And he teaches you the Peril Blade.
The Peril Beam.
The Peril Beam, sorry. Yeah, the worst variation of a thing I like a lot that
really
exists in this whole franchise. I love sword projectiles. I hate that this is, if you have one heart, it works.
I kind of dig that a lot, actually.
How often do you really have one heart in this game?
Well, I mean, I got to that point, actually, in the next dungeon, for a matter of fact.
Really?
Yep.
All right, well, I'm glad you had this with you, then.
It is, I mean, well, in order to get it from Waveblade, you first have to have at least 10 maximum hearts. Otherwise, he won't teach you.
Yeah, which is, I guess, a thing that they use every now and then.
Yeah, because, I mean...
Or you get gated from something due to your hearts.
Yeah, because I mean, why would you want to teach someone who has very little stamina? They'd be using Peril Beam all the time.
Oh, yeah, this would be great for a very weak man. He would just always have them.
You know, I mean, it's kind of irresponsible if you just put that in the hand of somebody who'd be slinging it around all the time, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Those are kind of most of the notes I have for Lake Hylia.
Yeah. Here. Weirdly enough, like, there's not a lot. Once you're done with the library, there's not a lot to do out here.
Wait a minute, Pete. Do you hear that?
I don't know what you're...
Can you hear that in the distance?
No. What?
It's tingle time.
Oh, boy. Oh, okay. All right.
The aforementioned David Jr. makes an appearance here.
I was wondering why you brought him up. Yeah, no, I... So this is the one in the white onesie, right?
This is the white onesie David Jr., yes.
Is there anything in particular you wanted to mention about David Jr., or...
So as someone who did not play much of Wind Waker, admittedly, I never met David Jr. before encountering him right here.
Okay.
I was obsessed with the fact for like 2 weeks straight that there is a Zelda character named David Jr. I just love it so much.
It's a fairly normal name.
That totally, but not like in Hyrule.
Sure. That's like when you find, like, you're playing Super Mario World and you find Morton Jr.
No, Morton Jr. Okay, Morton's not, I don't want to say anything bad about people named Morton, but like, I feel like the vibe of Morton Jr., the name, works with the vibe of Morton Jr., the character.
I guess?
David Jr., when you've been meeting nonstop characters with hat pun names and like Zelda and Link and Vati,
yeah,
and Ezlo, to meet just David Jr. is so good. That's good comedy.
I mean, also compared to people in his own family, like Tingle.
Exactly. I don't know that there's much to say about David Jr. He recognizes Link as Mr. Fairy. When you fuse Kinstones with him, it opens up another tree in Southeast Hyrule.
Right.
There are four total brothers that open up four total trees. There's a bigger thing down there.
Did we mention what the actual reward is for fusing with all four siblings?
No, I figure we'll probably have another one or two instances of Tingle time, and maybe at the end we'll bring it up.
If you insist, sure.
Unless I completely forget, at which case we'll have an emergency Tingle time in the last episode.
We'll have an emergency 2-minute upload.
We need to have a Tingle time. I am so sorry. Anyway, David Jr. actually has a line of dialogue where he acknowledges that he's not related to Tingle or his brothers, and he questions why he helps them.
Oh, well, there's the answer to what we were saying just now.
I guess so.
He's not related.
Yeah, he, along with the rest of the Tingle siblings, believes that fusing Kinstone pieces will help him meet fairies. So he's a fairy enthusiast at the very least.
Can we just tell him, like, hey, go buy a boomerang at the store and, like, throw it at this enemy and you'll meet some fairies? It's pretty simple.
Yeah. But then you're kind of putting someone who might not be competent in danger's way.
Unless...
Might be an irresponsible move.
Unless they're talking about the great fairies?
Maybe. Also, a very interesting note I'm seeing on the wiki page. In Breath of the Wild, Davdi Island is a reference to David Jr.
No. Really?
Which makes sense considering there's a Tingle Island, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
But Breath of the Wild went out of its way to reference David Jr.?
Yes! Yes! Have fun with that waveform. David Jr., welcome to Hyrule Warriors.
Oh, no.
It's a shame that Smash Brothers is done, because David Jr., you should be in Smash.
Yeah, that'd be the one. That's who you want in your corner, huh?
There you go.
In a doubles match. But, well, I'll tell you this. If this family is looking to meet the great fairies, there's actually someone in Lake Hylia who could instruct them.
Oh, yeah?
Elder Library. Later in... After there is a point in this game, slight spoilers, I won't be specific, there is a point where the library is no longer accessible.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But there is the option after that point to come back to Lake Hylia, and there is, I believe, an underground tunnel system that you can find that will lead to this small island in the center of Lake Hylia.
Huh.
And in that area, you'll find Elder Library. And Elder Library will give you a heart piece and tell you where to find all three great fairies.
Oh, I forgot about that completely. If only you could, like, introduce the two or the five.
I guess. I mean, what would it take to allow Tingle to shrink down to minish size?
Ooh, I don't like the idea of little Tingles just, like, hanging out above people's houses and whatnot.
Too much power for Tingle. I don't like that.
Too much power for Tingle. Yeah, that kind of covers all of the notable stuff about Lake Hylia in this game. It's a beautiful map.
I agree.
It's just there's not a whole lot.
It's a gorgeous area. I just wish there was more to do.
There's like three or four heart pieces.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of collecting in this big wide open area. Do you want to describe the entranceway to the Temple of Droplets before we pull over?
Sure. It kind of looks like it would be on the Super Mario World map, doesn't it?
You know what? A little bit, actually. Like, you'd find it out in the middle of the ocean, like that big Bowser thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that fits actually. Yeah, but you jump in and there's a little crack at the center of this ice platform mm-hmm. with like surrounded by ice stalagmites. And you shrink down with Ezlo and you fall down into the dungeon.
Again, it's just very confusing to me why there's just ice here in the center of the map. There's not even snow on the ground anywhere nearby.
You're talking about the dungeon itself?
Yeah.
Oh, well, the dungeon itself I can probably explain, because I think it's like...
Well, when we get into the dungeon, we see. But it's just like here, there's just a little bit of ice.
I mean...
I guess the idea is that... Take a shot.
Elemental magic. It is like the presence...
Oh, okay.
It's the presence of the element, similar to when you take the fire element out of Mount Krennel, things kind of chill out around there.
Wait, do they?
Don't they?
I kind of forgot already. Does the fire like level out a bit? Does it quiet down?
I'm trying to remember if I'm talking out of my head or not.
I don't know. You know what? That is a fair enough point. The element is there. But like then when you leave after our next episode, is that dungeon going to collapse? Is that little ice island going to disappear?
No, it's still there if you want to jump back in. Because, right. You know, possibly there's like a delay in it, you know, returning to normal.
Okay.
I'm winging it.
It's a good effort. I kind of like the reasoning.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to talk about before we wrap up?
I think that's about it. Chris, it is time to make our travel recommendations for Lake Hylia.
Oh, yeah. I'm totally ready to do that.
The height of preparedness, Chris.
Ooh, let's go.
So, Chris, what is your recommended photo op?
I would say outside of Stockwell's house. Stockwell just has a beautiful house.
You know, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, I think you're going to get a great shot. Maybe get, you know, bring the family, have a nice family shot right outside.
Don't tell people that it's somebody's house. It's just, you know.
No, tell them it's some like important landmark.
Yeah, it's a shrine or something.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
What about you? What's your choice?
I'm thinking my photo op would be like have someone hold my camera as I swim out to that little center island on Lake Hylia.
Oh, the little sand cave there?
Yeah, there's like an upper level where someone could stand and get a good shot down there.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Just sit on a little island in the middle of a lake.
They could be taking a picture of you, and just behind you, there could be an Octorok about to spit a rock right at the back of your forehead that you're completely unaware of.
Why would I want that?
No, oh, you wouldn't, but it would make for a great picture.
What is your recommended attraction?
My recommended attraction has got to be the haunted house that is the mayor's cabin. This weird house with all these gross lifeless masks all over it.
I mean, depending on what it looks like in three dimensions, I might agree with you.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, that's the thing that stuck out to me most, I think, in like, oh, either that or there's a cave up north where there is a thin ice path that you have to skate around to get a treasure chest with 200 rupees, because of course there is. But I mean, make that like a fun little ice skating rink attraction.
Okay. Elevated tightrope ice skating.
Yeah. Nothing makes a better family attraction than something that puts your life at risk completely.
You know, I bet someone out there has been looking to turn ice skating into an extreme sport. I think that'd be it.
What about you? What's your attraction choice?
Well, originally I was going to say climbing the books in the Royal Library, which is kind of cool. But I think I might go back to what you had mentioned, Chris. Mayor Hagen's cabin, which he does not deserve, should be reverted into a mask sculpting class that you can go to.
Oh yeah, I like that. Make a nice social program out of it.
Yeah. Wine and I mean, what's it called? Pour and sip that people do, but like make masks.
Oh yeah, like the drinking and painting.
Yeah.
Paint nights. Yeah, I love it. Okay, I was gonna say that's cheating. You stole mine, but I actually really like your spin on it.
What is your recommended food? Or what is it called? What's your best bite?
David Jr.
I'm sorry?
David Jr.
He's a great chef. He'll show you.
I'm gonna cook and eat David Jr.
Oh boy. Wow. I gave you an out and you did not go for it.
I mean, for what it's worth, there is nothing else that is new in this area. I mean, all the enemies we have seen already.
Here's okay. Maybe this will change your mind, and you'll come to my team here, Chris.
I don't think I am. I think I'm gonna eat David Jr.
Well,
go on. What's your best fight?
After you're done with that, if you're still feeling a little peckish, Chris, I invite you to try some red and blue Octorok seafood salad.
Okay. You did the thing that I do where you made a nice little dish out of a thing.
Sure. Why not?
I love it. No, it's a great choice. And I suddenly have a ton of regret. So yeah, good call.
Yeah, yeah. Turns out cannibalism isn't working out for you.
I chose this path in life and now I have to deal with the consequences.
That's okay.
And now my blood itches every 2 hours and I need to keep eating humans.
It's called being an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I think that's gonna be a wrap on Lake Hylia.
Do we have any postcards that we wanted to? Do we want to crack open the post office?
I think crack open the post office is a new one.
Do we want to break into? It is after hours. Do we want to break into the post office and see what mal exists in there?
Here's my crowbar. Let's go on in.
Let's do it.
A 5-star review sent to Apple Podcasts. Just discovered your podcast by Bran Nong. There's two N's in the middle. Bran Nong?
Bran Nong.
Or Bran Nong, it could be. I hope we're not being offensive here. if we are, please correct me. We'll issue a correction.
Uh-huh.
Brenong says, I bought my Wii U and Breath of the Wild 5 years ago, but I barely played it and finally decided I wanted to commit. But before doing that, I decided last month to play all other Zelda games of my childhood. That's kind of similar to what you did, Chris.
Yeah, I did play Breath of the Wild and then decided I want to go back and play them all.
Bernard goes on to say, I started with my first Zelda game I ever played, Ocarina of Time, and I was 18 hours in the dreaded Water Temple when I found your podcast.
Wait,
and then I put
mid-Water Temple he found us?
I guess so.
All right.
And then I put Ocarina on hold. I can't wait until you get to Ocarina of Time.
Neither can we.
For real. And went back to Skyward Sword, my second playthrough.
All right.
So I could play along with your podcast. I love how detailed you are going step by step with each game. The only downside, but it'll be worth the wait, is that it'll be 15 years before you get through all the games. So don't quit the podcast or go dying on us anytime soon.
I mean, for what it's worth. Yeah, we don't want to do that either.
I mean, no promises, but if I don't pull through, what are you going to do to me, Bernong?
Someone else will have to carry the torch.
Oh, yeah. We should probably, you know, similar to Till Death Do Us Blart, we could, assign the people who would follow up.
Yeah, yeah. Hello, Hyrule, next of kin.
In any case, Bernong continues. I see you have Minish Cap next, and I barely played that one, so I'll be playing that one next alongside your podcast. Keep up the good work, and I look forward to finally getting to Breath of the Wild, and my goal is to beat all Zelda games before the next one comes out. P.S. Excuse me, podcast is so cringy, but I can't help but laugh. Sometimes cringe can be good cringe. Chris.
Is that your intention?
Chris. Oh,
you're happy about that?
Sometimes cringe can be good cringe, Chris.
Okay. I'm so glad that we get to have good cringe every episode.
I think we do have good cringe every episode. We could probably put that on a review somewhere.
Good cringe in every episode.
Put that on a poster.
Thank you, Branong. I think Pete and I are equally excited to get to Ocarina of Time and similarly excited to hopefully not die before then.
I agree. Although I will say, Branong, if you want to pick up Breath of the Wild anytime, like that is a great idea because the odds of us getting to Breath of the Wild before Breath of the Wild 2 comes out
It's not happening.
I know it's been delayed a long time for Nong, but it is definitely going to come out before we get there.
Oh, yeah. I would be surprised if the Ocarina of Time season starts before Breath of the Wild, too, but we'll see.
Well, in any case, thanks a lot, Bernong. That was really fun to read.
Yeah, it genuinely makes me very happy to hear about people playing alongside our podcast.
Me too.
Thank you for letting us know.
We also have an email here from Brad with the subject line, listener theories.
Ooh, love a good listener theory. They're always like better than ours. Have you noticed that?
A lot of the time, yeah. I'm going to step my game up.
All right, so this one has two listener theories. Brad is writing in saying, my children love listening to your podcast and have written you a couple of theories. Thanks for the hard work you put into creating great content. So do you want to read one of these two theories and I'll read the other one?
Sure. Yeah, I'll kick it off with Evelyn. Age 10. Hello, Hyrule. I have a theory that I think links Skyward Sword and the Minish Cap. What if the Skyrulians are the Minish? And Skyloth is the Cloud Tops.
Interesting.
Because if Link game overed in Skyloft, he would have left his items up there. Then Fi lost the flames because she had no master. When traveling between Skyrule and Hyrule, the Triforce on Link and Zelda's hand made them big Minish like the Hurdy-Gurdy Man.
Oh my gosh. So good.
Then when Hyrule was in danger, the Minish, aka Skyrulians, went down and did not grow. In Gruus's case, he technically had the Triforce. Let me know what you think. And excuse me, podcast.
I love it so much. It's been so long since I've thought of the word Skyrule, and to see this kid using the word Skyrulians,
Chris,
it just warms my heart.
Chris, I dig this theory a lot, actually. Because, like, what if Skyward Sword was actually everything was tiny?
I mean, I really like the idea of a little Minish with a big red pompadour. I'll say that.
Everybody was actually tiny Minish, and then they came down, only a few people became bigs, like the Hurdy-Gurdy Man.
Another part I really appreciate about Evelyn's theory is her self-censorship saying that Link game over.
Yeah, no, that is very good.
I think I'm going to start using game overed in future episodes, if I can remember. Great theory, Evelyn. All right, well, I'm going to read this next theory from her little brother, Micah, aged 8.
Right on.
Hi, hello, Hyrule. I have a theory that will tell you how Birdie, Love, and the baby from Skyward Sword harvest stamina fruit and what's inside. Pete, when was the last time you thought about Birdie and Love, the potion merchants from Skyward Sword?
More recent than you think, but still not that recent.
Okay, well, we're going to think about them right now. I think the glowing green liquid in Stamina Fruit is a stamina potion, so Birdie and Love don't have to make it. But the way they harvest it is they open the stamina fruit and scoop it out with a bottle and put it in the cauldron. And in Breath of the Wild, there's Horwell's Island, Owlin Bridge, and the Sealed Temple.
Right.
But it's not called the Sealed Temple. It's called the Forgotten Temple. And there's a Zeltic video that has a bunch more reasons. But that's all from me. But wait, I still have to do this. Well, excuse me, podcast. I did promise that I will say that enthusiastically as long as it's in the form of a postcard. So
that's good. That's a good way to be, Chris.
You got me there, Micah.
You cut short some of the U's that were in that excuse me, but I'm going to let it go.
I think enough of them got it. That, and also, yeah, that's a great, I mean, there's nothing to disprove that, the stamina potion, it's the same exact color, right? So, I'm with you, Micah.
There's two things in this theory that I like a lot. One is that the baby is also harvesting stamina fruit. The other thing is that the stamina fruit is just straight potion. So, Birdie's not doing anything.
He's just kind of mixing it around. He's not mixing anything in. He's just spinning it around. It can't stay too still.
No brewing, no alchemy. Just dump it in a pot and look busy.
Thank you, Micah. Thank you, Evelyn. And thank you, Brad, for writing this and sharing these theories from your kids.
Yeah.
We kind of touched on it a few weeks ago when Aaron emailed in, but just the idea that people are listening to this with their kids and able to enjoy it with their kids is the coolest thing. So keep writing in. Thank you.
We must be doing something right, Chris.
I don't know, man. I love it, though.
If you want to shoot us a postcard with your opinions on how best to eat David Jr., then you can shoot it. You can reach out to us at HyrulePod@gmail.com or by dropping us a rating and review over on Apple Podcasts.
Word of advice, just don't eat David Jr. It kind of sets you down this dark path and your brain just gets foggy from then on.
You can find us on social at Hyrule Pod on Twitter, Tumblr, and Insta. You can also find me and Chris individually on Twitter. I am at the edge of my peat.
And I am also at the edge of my peat.
It's true. We're both there.
That's both of us at once. Alternatively, I am at a man named Babso.
In any case, that's going to do it for this episode of Hello Hyrule. Thank you for listening. Next episode is the Temple of Dwapwitz.
I can't wait for all those Dwapwitz, Daddy.
No. This is a family show.
Delete it. That doesn't even belong in the Rupersode. I'm so stressed right now.
I promise, you're fine. Until next time, I've been Pete.
I've been Quiz.
Excuse me, podcast.
Bad cringe.
No, it's good. That's that good crunchy cringe. I dig it.